from the heart of Dubai, where tomorrow is being built today to the world. Welcome to the CTO Show with Mehmet. Here, we redefine technology and reimagine possibilities. With Mehmet, delve into the riveting realms of AI, cybersecurity, and digital technology. Experience the thrilling highs and lows of startups. Immerse yourself in the spirit of entrepreneurship and witness the future of business innovation being written in real time. Now, without further ado, let's tune in and explore the future.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of the CTO Show with Mehmet. Today, I'm very pleased joining me from Texas, the U.S., Harvey Castro. Harvey, thank you very much for being with me on the show. As I was explaining to you before we started, the way I love to do it, I love my guests to introduce themselves because I have a belief that no one can introduce someone else better than themselves. So tell us a little bit more about you. Of course, like your known face in your domain, but still for the people who aren't living in my part of the world. Tell us a little bit about you and what you are up to.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me. It's an honor to be here. I love doing this information stuff just because I'm able to just help and teach. So a little bit of background for me. I call myself a little bit like a nutty professor. I love life and I love just anything that I see that there's a pain point, I just jump right in. To give you a quick background, I come from New York City, real humble beginning, grew up in poverty, and that'll explain why I probably am this overachiever. I'm an ER physician with over 20 years experience. I have done a lot of interesting items. At age 16, had my first business that was successful, and I was actually paying for my own insurance, my car, and doing well. By the time I was in medical school, I was writing Cliff Notes and selling many books to my medical students. By the time I was in residency, I decided to create my own vitamin company, and it went national, and I had my own brand and formulation and got a group of advisors and sold internationally as well. By the time I was in a recent graduate from medical school, and so I was playing with the iPhone, and I was coding a patient in the emergency room, and unfortunately, my patient was dying, and in the emergency room, when seconds count, I told my nurse, hey, we need to start this IV drip. And she said, 1 minute. She got a textbook and started thumbing through it, found the dose, verified, and said, okay, let's go. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm looking at the iPhone. I'm like, let's create an app. And so I created the first app in the world. It was called IV Meds. It went viral. And I was able to originally teach myself how to program. And after that, I got so much people buying it that I hired a team and I created another 35 apps in healthcare. And then fast forward, I'm working in the emergency room again, and I'm not happy with the way the hospital is treating patients. They're calling me saying, hurry up. They're telling me, don't order so much, don't spend so much money. And then you got to see the patients quickly. And I thought, you know, I'm a doctor. I'm not supposed to push people fast. I'm supposed to take care of people, take my time, give them my love. And long story short, I said, you know what? I'm going to start my own healthcare system. So I got a group of investors. I created over 20 emergency rooms. I packaged them and I had my own billing company, staffing company, and basically sold it. And then fast forward, the last part, I'm here playing with ChatGPT. It's November of 2022. And I'm thinking, oh my God, it was that iPhone moment. I thought, this is going to change healthcare. This is going to revolutionize the way we do things. And I remember so much. I was in this office typing a book. And within 3 weeks, I was on a sabbatical so I could do nothing but write. So I wrote it, I submitted it, and I had my book out. And I remember telling my wife, talking about it, and she'd come in and she's like, why are you so obsessed? What are you doing? And I said, oh, there's this thing called ChatGPT. And she's like, ChatGPT who? She's like, no one's going to read your book. No, everyone's going to think you're crazy. Don't waste your time. Fast forward, I've been invited to go around the world, China, Germany, Australia, as a keynote speaker. I've been talking around the world about healthcare and how to use ChatGPT. So I know that was a little bit long, but I kind of wanted to give you a nice background of everything.
No, it's not long at all. Actually, it's very hooking, I would say. You know, I get hooked while you speak, Harvey, and really very inspiring, I would say, career. But, you know, I'm always, when I, you know, talk to my guests, a little bit you know, curious to know. You mentioned a little bit of the background, and now maybe we will understand more from you. So you choose to be in healthcare, but at the same time, you know, you became an entrepreneur. And this is, I would say, a kind of a rare thing that happens. So was your background and, you know, maybe early in your life, you told me like you were overcoming some challenges. Did that play a role for you to be in both sides? Because honestly, Harvey, you know, and I discussed it with one of my guests before, that she was in healthcare. So we said that rarely you see people who goes in healthcare and become entrepreneurs at the same time. So it's a kind of a rare situation. So tell me more. What brought you to all this? What was the motivation behind?
Yeah, I know it's going to sound very cliche-ish, but I love people. I love serving. I just have this passion, and I think that passion is what made me a doctor. But then I tend to be, I like to fix things. I was just talking to my mom yesterday, and I said, she said she had a problem, and I was like, oh, you should do this, this, and that. And she's like, Harvey, you always come up with ideas and solutions. And she's like, you don't think normal like every other person. The way your brain thinks is very looking at outside the box or fixing problems. And I think having that passion to serve people and then seeing a pain point in healthcare saying, oh my God, we need to fix this. And then combining healthcare, entrepreneurship, wearing my CEO hat, now that I have AI, wearing the AI hat and putting it all together is making me really passionate about fixing. And so to answer your question, also, I think it's this internal fear of not having, and not that I'm saying I'm greedy. I'm happy that I have a roof over my head and that I can eat every day. I'm just saying, just this passion to always work hard and always improve. I just have this in me. Even when I was running 8 hospitals and I had 350 employees, I still wanted to improve. I was still asking the front people and the janitors, hey, how can I do better? What can I do? You would find me walking around the building, picking up trash, cleaning the bathrooms, because I wanted to make sure that this business was pristine and that if the CEO of the company would do something, that everybody under me would do the same. And so this is kind of this push internally. Last night I was watching TV with my wife, and we were watching some of the election results. And I said, don't get upset with me, but in the future, I want to run for the U.S. Congress. That is something in my heart, even if it's just one term. And I may be 70, I may be 80, but that's something that I want to do, because it's just this internal push that I just want to keep serving.
You know, Harvey, it's some of the rare moments, I would say, when someone is speaking, and I mentioned this a couple of times on the podcast, right? So you can feel the energy, but although like we are miles away, as they say, and, you know, regarding like thinking differently, I'm very much biased. You know, some people love him, some people don't. I can understand, but I'm very biased by Steve Jobs. And he said, like, the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world, they are actually the ones who do. So I think you are one of these people who, you know, you always challenge the status quo. I can feel this. We just, you know, start to speak today, and people knows that sometimes, you know, the guests I meet them on social media and so on. But really, Harvey, I would say this is amazing. Now, let's a little bit deep dive in some of the things that you are currently working on. And I know, like you mentioned, ChatGPT. So now, how did you see the adoption of not only ChatGPT, AI in general, in healthcare? And I'm asking this, it's not a generic question, because I know how much healthcare, I've been lucky enough to work as a technology consultant back in the days. And, you know, when we used to deal with healthcare, they're a different beast, as they say, like, because especially when it comes to something that will touch people's lives, right? And you have also some regulations there. So tell me what you have seen different this time with ChatGPT and all, you know, these other tools and the wave of generative AI and the other AI tools that are available to us today.
Very good question. So, you know, obviously AI has been around for over 50 years. A lot of people the difference today is that ChatGPT allowed us to use the tools and gave us the tools, but that technology, for example, Google invented GPTs, but it was ChatGPT that released it to the public first, and it just blew up. And so I want everyone to understand there's two flavors. There's something called structured data and unstructured. And I'm not going into the weeds, but this will explain why you'll see so much going on in some fields of medicine and some you won't see much. So in the structured part, just think of it. If you went to the doctor and you got an x-ray, or they, you know, a lot of times it's not film anymore, it's digitized. That information has been converted to numbers. And now that it's been converted to numbers, now AI can study those numbers and start analyzing. And so that's why we're seeing all these applications in dermatology, radiology, where they can put up an x-ray CAT scan and AI can look at it and say, oh, here's the cancer, here's the pneumonia, here's the pathology, the disease. As opposed to family medicine, when I speak to you and you're my patient, I type everything. Hopefully I'm using voice to text. But then all that information is not structured. You would think it's structured inside the electronic medical record, but in the AI world, it's not really structured. And so it's a little bit harder to get that information and start analyzing. Not that it can't be done, it can, but it's a lot easier to do the other examples. That's why we're seeing these machines that can look at your retina and say if you're diabetes. We can look at this camera right here that can look at my skin. And if it sees a certain ailment, it can say, yeah, that's cancerous. That is why all these algorithms, for example, this camera feed that you're using right now, my voice, you can actually, if you had the algorithm, say, Dr. Castro's sugar is this. He averages this sugar. This camera right here, my voice, you would be able to tell, you know what? He's going to have Alzheimer's disease. He's going to have, he's actually depressed. It actually could tell my if I'm lying. So all these things, because this information is digital. So I know I'm a little long-winded, but just wanted to teach a little bit and kind of explain. Now let's think about how can we use it in healthcare? This is the part that I'm so passionate about. What is the low-hanging fruit? What can everyone listening that's in healthcare or as a patient do today? One of the simplest things is communication. I speak English. I'm in Texas, but I'm originally from New York City. You're in the Middle East. And the way I explain things, someone in the Middle East may not understand. But if I use AI, and let's be specific to ChatGPT or Claude, any of the GPTs, I can now talk to you and talk to you. And let me explain what I mean by that. I can say, okay, I need to talk to my friend here, but I need to use examples from the Middle East. And so now, instead of me using examples from Texas or use the US Cowboys for football, I can talk about soccer. I could talk about different things there. And then when I'm explaining your health, I can start using that. Then you, as a patient, you're going to look at me and be like, man, my doctor, man, he knows how to talk to me. But not only that. Let's pretend you have a child that's 5 years old and I need to communicate. If I use AI to use the words of how you speak to a five-year-old, then I'm using the verbiage of a five-year-old. How many times have you gone to a doctor and they said something and you're like, I'm too embarrassed to ask, or I really don't understand that because I'm not a doctor. But then you're scared to ask a question. But if you have AI, AI can be that translator. We're speaking the same language, but now I can break it down to your culture, to your examples, to your age. And so now if you're five, I'm speaking as a kid. And my favorite example is if I take my discharge instructions and say, it's usually a couple of papers, but I take that and I feed it into ChatGPT or AI, and it breaks it down to what are the core things that I'm trying to teach you. But then here's the best part. If you're 5 years old, I feed it into like a dolly or diffuse, something that draws the pictures. And now I can make a coloring book. And instead of giving you papers for the parents, I'm giving the child a coloring book. And each page of the coloring book is a principle of their asthma. Let's say it's asthma. And teaching them about their disease. And so now the five-year-old can color with the doctor, color with the nurse, talk to the parents. And then they're going to start looking at the pictures and saying, oh, I need to take my medicine. Oh, my gosh, when I start feeling short-winded, I should tell my mom or dad. And so now I'm really giving healthcare. And so these are just a quick examples of how I can use AI today to make a huge difference for my patients.
That's great, Harvey. But now some people, and I'm not with them, but you know, my mission as a host is to ask, you know, all the questions that some people might ask. Now you are a doctor, right? So you know the context. Now there are some voices that started to say, hey, But sometimes ChatGPT do the hallucination thing that yes. we all know about. Not only ChatGPT, I mean the GPT model, the transformer model, this is the way it was designed. It can hallucinate. Mm-hmm. So I understood from you that same as when every doctor would say, hey, use this medicine with prescription, so use ChatGPT with a prescription. Are we talking about something similar here, that it's better to be under the supervision of someone like doctor like yourself, or someone at least who's have knowledge in the topic?
Yes, a beautiful question. And I'm glad you caught that. And I'm happy we're going to discuss this, because here's how I personally see this. I'm biased. In order to be safe, we have HIPAA, and in Europe, we have the GDPR. We have laws to protect us. Now, those laws are old. They didn't anticipate ChatGPT or this technology of GPT. And to your point, I am very worried about patients using this technology without doctors in the loop or healthcare professionals in the loop. Because in the United States, and at least everywhere in the world, I can teach doctors, but doctors ultimately have medicine. They understand medicine. They have the knowledge. They can hopefully understand when it's hallucinating. If I teach them the principles, then they can go looking at the different algorithms and say, yeah, this is good, this is bad, and they know. But the patients, they don't know medicine. That's the reason they go to the doctor most of the time. And if they think they know, they really don't know as much as a doctor, because they didn't go to med school and they don't have all those years experience. And so I am personally worried about a patient walking up to a computer and it says, oh, you have, based on their symptoms, you have cancer, or you have this disease, and then they walk to the pharmacy, because outside the U.S., you can go to a pharmacy and just get medications without a prescription. And so I am very worried that we're going to start hearing cases of people dying, people hurt. And so what I'm saying for sure is we need to have the technology, but make sure that you have that healthcare professional. That's why I'm comfortable with telling my patients, hey, bring your computer. If you have questions, we can look at it together, see the output. I will do you a favor. If you're looking up information, then send me the information that ChatGPT told you, and then I'll go through it and I'll give my blessings, or I'll change it, or I'll add it. And so we have to be very careful. The other thing I want to say to people is, we don't have this yet, but I want an equivalent of a food label. So that way a patient or doctor can pick up ChatGPT or Claude or any of these models and say, okay, let me look at it. It's like looking at a food label. Here's the good, here's the bad. Here's why it hallucinates. Here's ways that you shouldn't use it. A quick example is the studies that was trained into ChatGPT was obviously in the United States, and it's biased because the people programming it mostly was in the US. Now, what makes this complicated is there's this thing called reinforced learning. As the algorithm is pushed out, there's humans looking at it saying, yeah, this is good, this is bad. But in healthcare, they didn't have doctors giving the check mark up or down. They literally had people in developing countries getting paid about $1 an hour to look at it saying, yeah, that sounds good, check mark. And so what we need as a society is we need a GPT in healthcare that is used medical literature that doctors are reinforcing, but not just any doctor. I'm an ER doctor and I can reinforce ER stuff because I have 20 years experience and I know ER. But if you say, hey, Harvey, do me a favor, I am a radiologist and I want you to reinforce this model, I'm not a radiologist. I mean, I can read x-rays, CAT scan, but I'm not as good. So I have no business there. So what I'm saying is, as a public service announcement, I need to go out there and I'm trying my best to teach patients the good, the bad, the ugly. And I'm trying to do the same thing for the hospitals. In fact, every time I meet with any hospital administrators, I ask them, do you have a sign in your patient room? All over the hospitals and in the clinic that says, hey, here are the warning signs of AI. You know, do not use this without knowing the following. Because I want to make sure that patients understand this isn't so easy. I joke around, when I was in medical school, they called it Dr. Google. And I'm worried that GPT is so convincing that even some people that are experts are going to be confused or fooled about the output.
Now, this brings another question that came to my mind, Harvey, is about, now, we can educate people, I believe, about, you know, how they should use it. You know, you need to check with your doctor. But some people also might get a little bit discomfortable, because if we are using a tool like ChatGPT, which is a public tool, to your point that it has something there, So some people, and you mentioned HIPAA, you mentioned GDPR. Of course, we are not mentioning patient's name, but maybe someone will say, hey, but a lot of like some private information is going there, right? So you're describing maybe something, and they would say, hey, you know, we know that they can know who we are, even if we don't mention our names. And this doesn't only apply, by the way, from, I mean, like medicine only, I mean, sorry, medical perspective only, it can apply also on the other stuff. So maybe psychologists might be using ChatGPT as well. Maybe pharmacists will be using, people in pharma will be using that. So how we can do this balance between keeping the privacy and adopting this beautiful technology? Do you think like we need to build, you mentioned like healthcare needs its own GPT. So are you, and I can see some of the book covers behind you there. So do we need a specific or dedicated large language models for healthcare only, that maybe it's used only by healthcare professionals? Do you see this something that should happen? And is there anyone who's doing something regarding it now?
Yeah. Awesome question. So I'm a real big believer that we need to educate. And some people, for example, will use ChatGPT in some parts of the world and look at the output and say, oh, I'm going to use this for my population. But my argument is we really need a GPT for all parts of the world. We need not just one like ChatGPT that most of the world's using. We need to have our own GPT. So if I'm just going to make an example, if you're in India, then we need to have an India GPT. And then one that is using, this is a little technical, it's called federated learning. So the world of the country of India is obviously not the same. There's different regions. And so we need to create one for India, but then there have different models within India. So that way they're teaching each other. But then when they're using the model, it's only for that region of the country. And so we need more equivalent, like this book here, Bing Copilot LLM. My goal was to kind of explain all the ones that are out there, but we need one in healthcare. Now, you asked a great question. Is there anybody out there? Now, I have no stock in these two companies, but I have read that the two that are, actually, there's several. Let me start with simple ones to give you an example. There's one called Neurotron. They took all the unstructured data that I mentioned earlier about electronic medical record. They put it together with all the hospitals within their network. And then what they did is they created predictive analytics. So if you come to that hospital, they know the population, the problems, and then they know with the predictive analytics, should this patient go home? Should they stay? And then they have risk factors, and then they know with a better accuracy if that person should go home. Other people that are doing that is Gatortron in Florida. They're doing something similar. And now on the commercial side, there's a company called Glass Health. And what they're doing is helping physicians and creating better differential diagnosis so that me, as an ER doctor, let's pretend that it's 2 a.m. and I'm tired. I could put in the information into this model. It would gather all the information and say, yeah, this is possibly the following diagnosis. And then they're adding treatment plans. So then I can look and say, oh, okay, here's some treatment plans. And so that's a nice way of using AI. But the thing is, they're saying they're going topic by topic. And so within time, they'll have mapped out most of medicine, and they're getting reinforced learning from doctors. The other one that's out there is called Hippocratic AI. And then this particular one, they haven't really released very many details, but from what I understand, it's going to be another AI for healthcare, and it's supposed to be used in the hospital system. They claim that their algorithm is better than ChatGPT, but they haven't released anything that we can see. From what I know is when the company started, they got $50 million invested to them. So they're doing well. I'm a little jealous because I want to create my own LLM, and I would love to get some investors to help me create some of the products that I want to create for healthcare.
Hopefully some investors will be listening to the show today, Harvey. Now, I want to now look at, before we jump to something else, let's stay a little bit within the AI space. I know that no one has a crystal ball or something like this, but of course, you know, technology moving very, very, very fast. Now, if you would, try to guess what could be the next big thing that would be specifically an application of AI in healthcare, Now, one of the things, I brought it with multiple guests with me, like Dr. Kasher, she was with me last year. We talked about it. We talked also with Nadia Ripunova from, you know, real world data and all this. So, and we were trying to figure out if in the future, right, so we could have really the AI, call it generative AI, call it whatever you want, call it LLM, whatever name you would give it, that can help actually. And I know you're passionate about helping people, Harvey. So we're thinking about these people in not so much developed area in the world that they don't have proper access to healthcare. Can AI fill the gap? I'm not sure if AI would be able to do, you know, you are an ER doctor, so I'm not sure if it will reach that stage, but at least to do the basic thing that anyone living there would need from a basic healthcare. Do you think this is something feasible in the future?
Yeah. No, this is an awesome question. Another one. So I go, not to brag, but I literally go around the world giving a talk. And part of my talk, I say the following. We're going to start seeing certain parts of the world that are developing countries using ChatGPT or an AI in ways that the United States will not use. And that, I don't mean it in a derogatory way that they're doing it wrong. I'm just going to say they're going to think outside the box because risk versus benefits is different. If I'm the president of a country that is developing and I know my population is literally dying and they don't have access to healthcare, then I personally would say, you know what? The necessary evil is we need to use something, and that something will be AI. And I personally think we're going to start seeing examples of some parts of the world literally using, everyone's heard of Elon Musk. He has satellites that basically you can use anywhere in the world because they're satellite internet. And I see these developing countries reaching out to someone like Elon Musk, like, let us have access for free. And then people in certain regions that do not have internet, that do not have access to healthcare, being able to use the internet, but then they're going to have AI. And they're literally going to have, I foresee, like these trucks with generators and having computers where the local population will come in and say, okay, I have this disease, what could it be? And then they'll have probably like a person that may be a doctor or not there to help supervise, but that's going to be their healthcare. That's going to be their doctor. That's going to be their, hey, this is probably what's wrong. And then the government will give them medication and try to help. And I really see that happening. I truly think. And so some people are like, oh, Harvey, you're crazy. I'm like, no, think about it. There's some parts of the world that don't have access. I call it the healthcare IQ. If I got a cigarette right now and I started smoking, you guys would be like, what's wrong with this guy? He's smoking. Like, does he know that that's bad for him? But we all know that smoking is bad. But right now I may be eating something. I may be doing something in my life that can kill me, but I don't know that. But I really think that AI is going to teach us healthcare education, and that if our level is this, with time, it's only going to elevate. And as that healthcare education elevates, I'm going to start doing things different. It may be food. I may be eating differently. I may change my habits. There may be something that says I need to sleep at least 7 hours or more to live longer. So then maybe I'll start sleeping more. And so all these things, with time, my quality of life will improve. And I think with time, I will live longer. And so I really think that AI is going to do those things. AI is going to help elevate our education, elevate our understanding of healthcare, and it's going to start teaching us to a point that we're learning so fast. A lot of people really don't know, but last year, Scientific America announced that ChatGPT's IQ was equivalent to 155. What does that mean? Excuse me, the average population in the world, IQ is between 90 and 110. That means that this is higher than the average IQ of a human being. To put it in reference, Albert Einstein and Elon Musk are all above 155, around 160 to 170. So think about it. It's almost getting there. And so every year, this healthcare, if this ChatGPT's IQ is getting better and better and better, it's going to get to the point where no human being will know if the output of the GPT is correct or not, because it's going to be so advanced.
Yeah, and this could be also scary to your point, but yeah, like sometimes I like, you know, you know, when you mention, we know that it's evil, of course, it's not totally evil, but, you know, in the sense that it might give us wrong information and so on, but we have no other choice. So absolutely. Now, another thing, you know, and I know you are almost talking about it every day, which is the Apple Vision Pro. And I know you are very excited about its applications to the healthcare. So tell me, and I know like you also have the book. So let's talk about Apple Vision Pro. How excited are you about it? Again, where are you seeing the direct benefits, you know, the low-hanging fruits, to your point when we talked about AI, in terms of, you know, both patient care and, you know, training physicians also as well?
Okay, awesome question. So I'm going to pull up this prompt. These are Meta glasses. When I go outside, they turn dark like sunglasses. When I put them on, it turns on, and in the back, I can hear what ChatGPT, and I can have a conversation with ChatGPT, and I can take a picture of you right now, and then with that button, or I can tell it, hey, Meta, take a picture, and it'll take a picture. But the cool part of this is that if I'm looking at a patient and say I'm looking at a skin disease, I could take a picture, and when it takes a picture, it could tell me exactly what is going on, and it can analyze the picture. Now, I'm going to take this off because I have the volume up high, but I just wanted to show you that as a doctor, what can you do with that? And so I can analyze pictures. I can, if you have a family doctor and you're in the emergency room, I can stream it to your family practice doctor. These are all possibilities. Now, I have my Apple Vision Pro right here, and obviously you know what this looks like and what can it do. I've modified it. I have a 3D printer, and I put another one of these to really give me a nice fit. And so how do I see this thing working? Well, I think I'm going to give you an example from an emergency room point of view, because I'm an ER doctor. If you're in the emergency room and when seconds count, how nice would it be that if I have these on and I'm taking care of you, I can see through it and I can see you. But then as your labs are coming in, I can see part of my vision that it has your labs. If I need your x-ray, the x-ray is right there. If I have to do a procedure and I have to go very carefully into you, then if I have the x-ray or CAT scan there, I can find that lesion because I know where it is and I have it in real time. Let's pretend you speak another language. Then in theory, I can speak through the Vision Pro, listen through the Vision Pro, but then it'll translate in real time. And now I can communicate with you. Other things is I can mirror this thing. So if I have it on and we have a TV in the room, everything I see can be mirrored on the TV so you can see it. And so really quickly, I can take care of you. And when seconds count, I can use this device. Now, other ways, I'm not a neurosurgeon, but believe it or not, this is being used in neurosurgery. And so they're doing something similar. As they're doing surgery, they're able to see the CAT scan, the ailment, the tumor. I mean, imagine that. Imagine how fast I can help you or how that's going to change it. The other thing is my eyes. Luckily, I had LASIK, I'm 20/20, but if I put that on, I can zoom into a lesion and really explore it and really look at it. So now I can really find the nice details of that lesion in your body, or I can see it in real time on the skin, and I can blow it up and see things that I may not be able to see with my eyes. And so now really quickly, I'm able to help. The other part to this is just education. Imagine putting these on, and if I'm seeing things, and say you're in the Middle East, you have one over there. And as I'm seeing things, I can stream it to you and I can explain and I can teach you. I can almost teach you medicine in your other parts of the world. And so if I'm seeing a rare case of, let's pretend it's some syndrome that only like 10 people in the world have, now I can show you in real time and you can ask questions. And so in the educational world, I can have digital twins. I can have like all these things that I can create to educate you. So imagine going to med school now, how much more fun, how quicker I can teach you.
It's like, you know, everyone, when they saw in general the Apple Vision Pro, they said like it's, they felt they are, they, you know, you become like Iron Man with Jarvis, right? So yeah. It's kind of that moment. But do you think, okay, so how easy is it to adopt like something like Apple Vision Pro or any extended reality if we want to compare it with AI, because I believe here, you know, maybe it's there will be less friction from compliance perspective and all the other things that we mentioned about AI. Are you seeing like signs that, yeah, this is something that healthcare, we will just take it like this, or it's going to be like slower? Like, what could be the obstacles that, you know, the industry, the healthcare would face to adopt it on a larger scale?
Yeah, awesome question. You know, I'm going to put my administrative hat and not the doctor hat. At the end of the day, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on what side you're on, the healthcare hospital that's going to buy these devices are going to look at the cost and how much money is it saving and how much money is it bringing into the hospital. And so I think the first adopters in healthcare will be the departments that have a lot of money, i.e. your neurosurgeons, your surgery departments, because they have so much money coming in that the hospital say, you know what, we will buy these devices. In other parts of healthcare where if they can't justify that this is saving money or that it's going to make more money for them, they're not going to put the money there first. They're going to put it in places where they get more money. So that's going to be an issue in healthcare. Obviously, this is $3,500 toy. If this thing falls and breaks, that's a lot of money to break. And so depending on the work environment, they may not put it in that work environment. But here's the beauty. I think, for example, everybody's heard of Epic. It's an electronic medical record. They already have an app of that example that I gave, and they're testing it. And from what I hear, different hospitals are going to start using it as a testing. And I think in the future, it'll be common. But imagine doctors like me that say, you know what, I'll spend the money. I want to do this. I think this is great. And I think we're going to start seeing some early adopter physicians, patients using this and inventing things. I'm not self-promoting here when I say I am working on an Apple Vision Pro myself. I'm hoping to have a prototype out on the market next week. It's done and I'm going to submit it. But my goal is to keep creating more apps that I can put it out there. And so to show a combination of AI with the Apple Vision Pro. Because I really believe that when you combine those two worlds and you create a product, you're going to have something that's leveraging AI, but then you're leveraging this new technology. And so I'm really stoked about how we're going to change medicine, how we're going to do things in the world, and how we're going to change the workflows around the world. And I really see that coming.
I see that coming, I mean, not only in healthcare, because, of course, it's a form of AI. It's text-to-speech. Speech to text, combined with the extended reality that the Apple Vision Pro can give. Now, out of curiosity, Harvey, because you know I know you've been using it for quite some time. One of the things that I've read, you know, from people I know directly or indirectly, and you know what I've read on the internet from the reviews, and not only about the Apple Vision Pro, it can be applied to any device similar to it. Like, and I'm asking here from a little bit kind of a medical perspective. Some people, they said, you know, putting it like for long times, you know, it might let you lose the feeling of the reality and then you start to mix things together. Like, have you faced something similar? And the reason I'm asking you, because now back to using it in the ER room and you are under pressure or maybe even for just a normal diagnostics or something like that. So if I put it for a long time, you know, first of all, is there any proof for that? I think it's still too early to judge. But I mean, how do you think like this can affect also the adoption for that? Have you figured, I mean, faced it yourself, putting it for a long time and then feeling weird a little bit after you remove them?
That's so funny. No, I love the question. Very good question. Actually, I have studied this. So there are some early studies that say prolonged use is not good, that it can alter your reality because it's that good. I made this funny mistake and I'm embarrassed to share it. I love doing Zoom and watching Zoom with this thing on because I can make my TV screen 100 inches big and then I can have a couple of windows open and I can do it. There was this one slide I was watching and I was so into the conversation or into this presentation that I got my phone well, I have my Vision Pro and I'm starting to take pictures. And then I look at the picture and it's a picture of the wall. And I thought, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I took a picture of the wall thinking I was taking a picture of the slide. And I was like, wow, I must be really into the immersed. Now, some of the studies that is kind of scary, your depth perception, how far things are, gets altered. And there's this one study that says, if you're driving, if you're doing something mechanical, you're going to be off a little bit because your perception, your brain literally starts adapting to this other world. And then in my mind, I thought, oh my God, this is kind of bad, because if that is truly the case, it may be years, but in the future, they may say, when was the last time you used your Apple Pro? You got into a car wreck, you're going to be fine because you were on the Apple Vision Pro and your perception, and you should not do that. And I really think it'll be like texting and driving. It'll be like no VR for X amount of time before you drive. I know people are like, oh, that's crazy. No, I really think that's going to be a thing. To answer your question, obviously everybody's anatomy is different. Everybody's muscle is different. I'm going to say and joke with you, I have a big head. And so when I put the Apple Vision Pro, the weight, it doesn't bother me because I really think my anatomy is big. And so it doesn't feel bad. The other thing is I showed you this 3D printer. I should pick another color, but I printed these things and I added two. So now I have one way of wearing it, but it's putting weight up here and here and it's distributing it better. So that way, if I wear it for long hours, it doesn't bother me at all. But to be honest, I was doing fine without the second strap. And now when I put it on those, I feel very secure that if I jolt or move or long period of times, I really don't feel it. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious because I didn't put my hands on it yet. So I'm trying to get some insights from different people. But of course, for this specific use, it's really something amazing. Now, because we're talking about trends, we talk about insights and what might come in the future. Some people, they said, okay, it's an amazing, astonishing technology device, but it's bulky. Do you think that in the future, we might be able to do the same that Apple Vision Pro or any other similar device does today, but into a small factor way, maybe? Or would we reach a phase and, again, we're going to, Elon Musk going to become famous on my show for some reason or other. So we talk about the Neuralink and, all the stuff that he's doing. So I'm trying to understand, would it be possible in the future to bring that into the form of the glass or maybe lens?
Yeah. Yes.
What do you think? Where do you think we are heading in that space?
Yes. Again, I'm not trying to ask for money, but I am kind of asking for money. Someone's listening. I have the technology to convert this where we can put the output right here on the glass. And I want, as a prototype, I haven't done it yet. I want to get some glasses, put the mechanism that's here, combine it with AI, and to create glasses that will have the information on here, but then will leverage the best of both worlds. So that way it could be in every day. And I honestly think there are several companies that are already working on that, but I really think we need somebody that's inside to really know. I feel like I understand technology. I can bring healthcare together. I feel like I'm a futurist in a way, and you put those three together and create a product. Either I create or someone else, but this will be created. And I really do see a future where, just like having a mobile phone, everybody will have a pair of glasses that have that technology. Imagine the power of being able to speak to AI in real time and get that information in your ear. And say you're in a speech, or right now you're asking me a question, and say I don't know, being able to have the glasses go through it, tell it, and then tell me in my ear, and then I can tell you. I mean, there's so many things. And so I really think the future will be glasses like you just mentioned. That will happen, and there are some prototypes out there like that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I was to say, that we start to see signs of attempts to create devices that can integrate the AI with our senses, I would say all of them. Now, Harvey, as we almost come to an end, and this is a question I like to ask all my guests, like, if you want to leave the audience today with like a piece of advice, especially if they are in the healthcare, you know, if they are doctors maybe, or maybe someone who is on the verge to take a leap, they are in the healthcare, you know, and they want to become entrepreneurs. Like final thoughts from your side. And then if you can also mention where people can get to know more about you.
Awesome. So number, I want to say two things with the closing. Number one, if you want to be an entrepreneur, look at it. I'll give you some advice. One is work backwards. What is it you want to fix? And then go back and see how can you get there. So have an end in mind. The other is you have to be passionate about something. Find a passion, something that you do, something that you know, ideally. If you're in healthcare, then stick to healthcare. But then find some pain point that you're so passionate about that you're like, you know what? This isn't work. This doesn't feel like something bad. Like, I'm so passionate. I want to fix it. Because that's going to drive you when you don't feel like working. That's going to push you to think outside the box. Now, the second thing I wanted to say, just this is nothing related to entrepreneurship, but, you know, we tend to be type A personalities. We tend to, I don't want to say neglect our families or neglect our loved ones, but I'm going to say today, every day of your life, try to live it as if it's your last. Let's just pretend you were going to die today. And every day, make sure you call your loved ones, you hug your family, you tell them you love them, you make peace with your enemies, because you want to make sure that every day you take time for yourself. For me, I try my best to go on walks, see the sunset. I try to give my wife and kids hugs every day because we just don't know. So I want to end it, the part of it today with saying, hey, live today to the max, enjoy life, but also balance it. Then the last part, as far as finding me, my social media is right here. It says Harvey Castro MD, and I'm on all the social media. I joke and say I'm always on LinkedIn. On Amazon, you'll find my books. Just go on Amazon.com and type in Harvey Castro, and here's the Apple Vision Pro. And then more importantly, if I can be a resource, if I can help, I've been a consultant for hospital systems and different startups around the world. I love to help and contribute.
Thank you very much, Harvey. I will make sure, first of all, the links are in the show notes so people can find them very easily. Second, I really want to thank you for, you know, your time first. Especially, you know, I appreciate doctors' times, you know, because doctors always busy giving care to their patients. So really, I appreciate that, taking the time to speak to me today. And of course, for the wonderful and very insightful ideas that you gave us and the insights you gave us. I really appreciate that, Harvey. And usually this is how I end my podcast show. So this is for the audience. If you just discovered this episode by luck or chance, thank you for passing by. I hope you enjoyed it. Please do me a favor, subscribe and tell your friends and colleagues about it. We are available on all podcasting platforms. We're available on YouTube. And if you are one of the loyal fans that keep coming, thank you very much for all your support. Just a reminder, I just started also having, you know, a one-to-one calls. You can find them on my LinkedIn. You can just click and then book a time with me. Again, thank you very much for tuning in. We will be again in a new episode very soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hit that subscribe button. Share the show with your tech-savvy friends and fellow entrepreneurs. And leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. Your support means the world to us.